Hi, everybody. This is Walter Palmer. I'm a member of the class of 1990 and the director of Dartmouth for Life and Alumni Relations. I've worked at Dartmouth for about 18 months, and our unit's responsible for Future of Work networking events, Camp Dartmouth for families in the summer, and the Career Network. We've thought about doing a podcast for quite a while because we've come across so many amazing stories from alumni about what they're doing in their careers. One of the things I love to do at work is take my meetings as a walk around Occam Pond. It takes about 30 to 35 minutes. It's the perfect length of time for a conversation. I usually walk counterclockwise, past Dick's house on the right, the DOC house on the left, and the homes on Occam Ridge up on the right. We're trying to emulate that time frame in this virtual version. Normally, I can be found at Blunt Alumni Center, that white building that's at the northwest corner of the green and across the street from Baker Library. But today, I'm coming to you from my home in Milton, Massachusetts. Like many of you, and all Dartmouth students now, I'm working remotely. With all that's happening with the COVID-19 outbreak, I thought we'd start with some stories about what's happening on Main Street. Today, I'll talk to three alumni who own small businesses in Hanover to hear how they're weathering the current crisis. First, Allie Levy, class of 2011, who only 4 months ago jumped into the gap left by the closing of the Dartmouth bookstore to open Still North Books and Bar. Allie was the arts and entertainment editor at the D and had a ton of different experiences in the publishing industry before returning to Hanover. Then John Pepper, class of 91, he was a CEO for 20 years at Beloco and is now the majority owner and CEO of Worthy. I know John is a tireless advocate for his employees and working people in general. And finally, Jarrett Burke. He's a Tuck 2017 and is the owner of Lou's Restaurant. Jarrett's a graduate of the Naval Academy and retired from the Marines as a captain where he piloted helicopters. This is a conversation about facing challenges and resilience. Wherever you are, we hope you're safe and sound. Now let's go for a walk. First, I just want to thank you guys really for being on. There's a lot of Dartmouth alumni that run small businesses and or are self-employed, and I thought it was a good idea to have a conversation with the three of you who run businesses in the Upper Valley in the area that a lot of alumni know. You know, this is a tough time for people. And I thought we would have a conversation just about some of the challenges your businesses are facing and how you're managing, you know, through this crisis. And I, you know, John, I think we'll start kind of starting with you just to put some context on this. You know, how are things like today at this moment in the Upper Valley? What's the sense? What's the spirit?
So the Upper Valley is very quiet right now, as you can imagine. I mean, if you just those of us who are still out and about because we have employees working, we're trying to support their livelihoods by trying to figure out how to keep their jobs going and keep everybody safe. It's been stunning to see how quiet it is. Even with most of the, you know, the businesses closed on Main Street, the other thing that we've noticed is those of us who are open are still pretty quiet also. So people have literally disappeared. I feel like many people feel this is statistically one of the safer places to be. We're naturally spread out, but I think people have taken the, you know, stay at home warnings very seriously. So you really don't see a lot of people out and about. You do see a lot of people walking the rural streets of Norwich,
right?
And probably Hanover too, but yeah. Okay. It's a different place.
Jarrett, I mean, how do you compare it to the time like over break, you know, winter break when all the students are gone? I know that's a really tough time as well for local businesses. And that was something Dartmouth went to a few years before, you know, you came into town and maybe you haven't had to experience that, you know, what it was like when students were there a little bit longer. But I wonder, how would you compare it to that in terms of the level of your business? And
yeah, it's a very similar feeling, I would say, minus of course the weather and things like that. But you know, I remember my first going into my first December as the owner. You know, I looked at all the numbers from previous years. I was very familiar with the previous owner's P&L, and they kept really good data on guest counts and things like that. And so I knew that it was going to be slow, but it's definitely weird when you go from November, October, which is typically our biggest month, into November, which is pretty busy, and then going into like pie season around Thanksgiving. And then literally like Thanksgiving is crazy and all the students leave, and then it's
right. Dead.
I mean, it is just dead for really 3 weeks until some of the local kids come back. And then even then it's like, it's just like cold. And
Jared, stop. You're making me sad.
I know. Have you ever read the book, The Road?
Oh, no.
Like, that's what it feels like. Like you read that book and you're reading it and you're actually like cold. Like, I don't know. It's strange. Yeah. But that's like what December felt like for me. I'm like, oh my God, there's like nobody around.
Right.
And it does feel a little like that. Like, you know, there's no cars parked on the streets. There's still some people walking around, but it's very quiet. And, you know, our business, this might be getting ahead a little bit, but we've really pivoted a lot. And, you know, back of the house is still doing the same type of stuff for the most part, but for the front of the house, it's totally different. Like, now it's all takeout and delivery. The servers are doing deliveries, driving, and,
right.
You know, now it's, instead of plates coming into the expo window and, you know, them running it, it's like filling paper bags with, to-go containers. And so it's like, the whole thing just feels different and
very different
struggles.
Yeah.
That kind of makes it feel like it's a little bit busier because, you know, we're not doing as much as far as revenue or anything like that, but it's hard to do something different. And you know, it also takes brain cycles. It also takes, you know, effort. And so for that reason, it hasn't felt painfully slow because there is a lot of other kind of stuff going on, other learning.
Right.
But, right. But it's weird. I mean,
yeah, I remember some time when I was, you know, I was an athlete at Dartmouth and spent a few of those cold winter breaks in Hanover without many other people around. And I have a similar sense of it. But one thing is very different this time, obviously, and that is that we're dealing with this COVID-19 outbreak. And I wonder, you know, Ali, with you coming in, starting a new business, there was so much enthusiasm and excitement in the alumni body for you coming in and getting things going. And it seemed like things were going pretty well. When did you kind of first realize that this COVID-19 situation was going to affect your business? And then, you know, when you think about what kind of effect has there been over the past, you know, few weeks on your business?
So I remember in like last week of February, starting to wonder if it was going to affect the business and just seeing maybe like, you know, we were a hair less busy than we expected to be, or we were able to send people home a little bit earlier than we had. And I think when I realized this was definitely going to have an effect, and I at that time didn't even realize the extent of it, was when the first case was announced in the Upper Valley. And at that point, we started to see just fewer people in the store, fewer people sitting in the cafe. The book side of our business kind of stayed pretty steady for a while until we made the decision to close our doors for browsing. But the cafe really started to just kind of die off fast. And then I think when the schools announced that they were closing and we started to really kind of grapple with, do we need to close? What does closing look like for us? You know, what does curbside look like? How do we get our e-commerce site up as soon as possible? Yeah, that's when I kind of realized what the extent might be, and we still don't really know.
So that leads right to it, you know, in the ways that you've had to adapt. So maybe starting with you again, Ali, you know, so how have you had to adapt? I mean, you know, what are some of the concrete ways you've had to change the way that you're doing this, and, you know, what does it look like right now compared to what it was?
So we, when we opened, we made the really intentional decision not to even have an e-commerce website. I wanted to put as many of the resources into the in-store experience as possible, which was going great. And then all of a sudden, we had the one thing that made all of that irrelevant. So we decided that we were going to focus as much as possible on getting our site enabled for e-commerce. And we were able to do that in about a week and a half. So at this point, we've got our site up and we're able to do online sales. But through that transition period, it was like just a ton of little steps down from being a fully open and functional bookstore and cafe to now we're just a bookstore and we're doing takeout to now we're only doing email and phone orders. And like Jarrett was saying, that takes so much more. It takes so much more time and brain power to sell a book to somebody over the phone or over email than it does to have them grab a book off of your shelf. And then finally down to where we are now, which is we're only taking online orders. It's only me in the store fulfilling orders. I've got a couple of people still working remotely. and we're going to see what that looks like.
See what that looks like. John, what is Boloco, you know, and some of Worthy, like how are you guys adapting or how have you adapted over the last couple of weeks? What's that been looking like in terms of your practices?
For Boloco, it's been, you know, just a precipitous drop almost immediately in sales and traffic, right? So we knew very quickly that this was, especially, you know, we have our restaurant here in Hanover, but we have seven others in Boston. And the three in the financial district of Boston as an example. I mean, we gave it, as they would say, the good college try for 3 days. You know, I think our last day at our Atlantic Wharf location, we had 27 customers, which is just a non-starter. And this is before we had any visibility on, you know, what the government might do. So we sort of pivoted our entire business model. We simplified, we dropped, you know, we have a few hundred ingredients that we usually carry and deal with and create all our, what we hope are a very sort of appealing menu items. But I think we're down to like a couple dozen ingredients right now. We've got what we call the, you know, the feed the frontline limited menu. And it's just very basic. Everything is $5 so that people who are out in the workforce right now can afford to actually visit us. Because most
That's
of
an
our
amazing initiative.
Yeah. And we, you know, through that, we actually ended up surprisingly and unexpectedly raising where I think we just crossed over $28,000 on our GoFundMe page, which, you know, will feed nearly 6,000 meals through the Upper Valley in Boston to like hospital workers. But that $28,000 are donations that go to produce the food and pay our people to actually continue to work. And so it's really been an interesting revelation. It wasn't my idea. It was a customer idea. We just sort of did what she said. And that's how that turned out. But, you know, and even though we've got that, I mean, sales, I mean, today's, I'm looking at, anybody in the Upper Valley knows it's a horrible day. Maybe we'll do $800 today in Hanover. I don't know. I haven't looked, but you know, we're moving out of it makes sense to stay open mode pretty quickly here. Wow. We're hanging on to four of our restaurants, but that's how we've had to modify.
Jared, I know with you and Luz, you guys have also done some serious pivoting. I mean, Luz is I guess we're just getting ready to start the new term. You know, students would be coming back and you guys would be packed and the adjustments and the adaptations you've had to make. Maybe talk a little bit about some of those concrete adaptations and what you've had to do.
We haven't changed the menu much. There's a couple things that have become very low volume that we stopped doing, but for the most part, we've kept everything on and our, in our business, we do a lot from scratch and a lot from we like each ingredient we try and do a lot with. So there wasn't really a big savings or anything like that to change kind of our core business. The big shift has been in going from where about 60% of our revenue comes from the restaurant, about 25% from the bakery, and then about 15% from catering. And so now, you know, catering is essentially at zero because the hospital doesn't want visitors. And then Dartmouth is essentially non-existent. So catering has kind of gone to zero. You know, they are taking on this dinners to go aspect. So we're doing these family style dinners, feeds 4 to 6 people, you know, bulletproof type of thing. So lasagna, enchiladas, things that can be rewarmed.
Sounds good. I wish I were a little closer.
Yeah, they are good. It's a little tough for us to kind of break through because our brand is breakfast and people don't think of us for, so there's been a little bit of a struggle there to get people to think about us, but it's going well. You know, we did, on Friday, we did 30 of those and that was 3 times more than we had ever done in a day. So that's you know, going pretty well. And then the big shift has just been going to all takeout and delivery. We had a decent takeout business. We were doing on a busy weekend, 80 to 100. On a busy weekday, we'd get 50 to 70. And now we're doing about 50 to 70 takeout orders a day. You know, it's just been a shift in kind of where the money is coming from. And then we're borrowing the food truck the Tux food truck, the box. We set up over at the Black Center, the community center across from the co-op there. We're doing that. It's not really making much money, but it's something and it's covering the labor costs. So I'm happy with that. But it's just been kind of a different thing. And then, you know, since we have a bunch of people in the restaurant and they're somewhat close to each other, I'm harping on the 6 feet, but it's hard because it's a small restaurant.
Right.
So we take everyone's temperature every day. We have a little questionnaire to see if they have, you know, any symptoms. Nothing's come up. So, you know, we feel like it's safe to continue, but that's one of the things that I ask myself all the time, kind of like a moral ethical standpoint is, am I doing the right thing? Because, you know, from a business standpoint, it is, we have contribution margin. So it's better to keep the doors open than to close them. But am I putting people at risk? You know, my staff and my customers by having them come in and having people come into the store and things like that. And so that's been a little bit of a struggle for me, but I feel like we're doing everything we can to stay safe. And then, you know, there is some reinforcement in just some other restaurants like John and a lot of the big cities where restaurants that had a takeout business are continuing to have that and they're not closing. So I feel like I'm doing the right thing here, but I'm certainly worried about, you know, an employee getting sick or something like that. And then, you know, as soon as we get any indication of that, then we're going to shut it all down.
Yeah. That's really the big, you know, the big difference and challenge here, right? Is just, we just don't know what the trajectory, where this might go and how that's going to impact that. It could happen so quickly. I saw what happened in the NBA with a player getting sick and that just shut everything down right away. John, you know, you've been through some tough times before and with Beloka when you were the CEO. How's your previous experience with that, with, you know, even the dot-com boom, 9/11, you know, you founded it in 1997, then the 2008 crisis, you know, I know you've been through a lot. What does your experience tell you about this and preparing for this and what you're going into here and how might that relate or be helpful for other people?
Yeah, I'll just tell you, this one's totally different. I mean, we were really scared in 2008, 2009 when sales were dropping 15% to 20%. And this is from a business standpoint, right? I'm not speaking to the fear and concern, like Jarrett was saying, about the sort of the ethical dilemma of, do we stay open? I mean, I've gone back and forth on this every day, multiple times a day. This is different. I mean, we had restaurants down 90%. Wow. There is no business. There's no reason to be in business. You've lost your business. You could try to stay open and act like you can do it and have positive attitude, but it's you know, we had a few people doing that, like, no, we can't close, but there was no business to speak of. And that's the big difference. The other thing is that in the 2008-2009 recession, there were still, which is the closest to it, 9/11 was, there was a pretty big shockwave for a few days, right? Literally. And then there was, but our business kind of came back and we actually had one of our best years following 9/11. October 1 to September of 2002, was one of our most profitable and strongest sales growth years of all time, which is weird to this day and probably a false positive in my thinking later on. But I don't think anything like that right now. You know, I worry mostly that we're not prepared for another situation like this. And how are we going to restructure our restaurants and retail and street businesses in general to prepare to be safe in the future? And, you know, not just sort of say when this passes, we're back to normal. It's not going to be business as usual. You know, we're going to see a different way of behaving. I mean, the idea, when you watch a show now and you see people hugging and shaking their hand, you know, it's a little bit disturbing. Yeah, you're like, hey, the corona, you know, what about the corona?
Yeah.
These are like, you know, Madame Secretary, I'm watching this. I just think we're going to look at how we interact differently in spaces like in restaurants, retail in general, and office buildings. So yeah, I will tell you this, though, the unprecedented piece besides the virus itself is, and I think Jarrett's probably best to speak on this part, is just how the government has stepped in and acknowledged what's taking place. Because were it not for that, I was literally on my knees on Wednesday about to shutter the whole thing. After 23 years, I could not see a path to open again in Massachusetts specifically. We have Hanover's a different entity for us. But it would have been 2 weeks behind or 3 weeks behind.
Right.
The difference here is the reason we even get to have this moral debate within ourselves is because right now it's possible that we should just shut the restaurants down out of absolute caution, because there is a safety net, we think. Pretty sure.
Yeah. Maybe, Jarrett, if you're familiar, you know, we watched, it's very recent, obviously, this government assistance package that's come through. It's it seems huge, but the question is it large enough even? It's amazing that we're even having to ask that question. If you've had a chance to look through some of the pieces of it, how does that look to you, and how do you think it might help what you're doing? And you know, if any of you have other, you know, points, feel free to chime in afterwards, John or Allie.
So first of all, the details of it started coming out of the Senate midweek last week, and I got to look at what the big picture was going to be. I had a huge sigh of relief because I knew that it would help me immensely. All of our businesses, I would venture, Allie, you're in the same boat. You know, labor is my biggest cost on my P&L. You know, the big question for me was, how am I going to pay for it? I didn't want to lay anybody off. I was pretty set on that I was going to do everything I could to just, you know, continue to keep people on, even if it was that they were reduced by 25% or something like that. But I didn't know how I was going to do it. And for me, I was kind of like John, counting the days. You know, I'm like, this is how much cash we have. This is how much cash we're burning every single day. And I have this many days. And then, you know, when this bill came out, or when we started to see the details, it literally changed the whole outlook for me, because I was thinking more about my business, you know, and how we're going to do well and come out of this on the other side, and not just how far away is the end. And the biggest aspect of this, and you're right, there is a question of, is this going to be enough? But the biggest aspect is this, the PPP, Paycheck Protection Program. Basics of it are, you can take a loan for 2.5 months of payroll, total payroll. And you can include things like utilities and some of these other expenses, fixed costs that you kind of have to pay. And then they're going to take out of that 10 weeks-ish, 8 weeks of that, as long as you don't reduce your force. And there are some rules as far as how it works and you know, bounds they have to stay in. But 8 weeks of that will be forgiven. I have two SBA loans. So I have a 7A, which is a kind of general business loan, which is what I use to purchase the business from the previous owners. And then I have a 504 loan, which is what I use to purchase the real estate from the previous owners. Both of those are backed by the SBA, but really you go through a local bank to do all the paperwork, and then the SBA just backs it, right? They just say, if this thing goes, then, you know, we're going to back either 50% or 80%. So I have two of those loans in place, and the process for this PPP is going to be exactly the same. So it's all the same paperwork. It's all the same, everything. And so for me, it's looking like it's going to be pretty easy because they have all the stuff on file. So they should just be able to run it. And
so Jared, how does this compare to landing a helicopter with no moon on a ship at night?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Both are stress. Very different. I've talked about this a couple of times. It's like I've gotten, they call it stress inoculation in the military, especially when it comes to like survival, right, and things like that, where you experience these like super, super, super high stress events. And the more you experience them, the calmer you are the next time, and the more you're right, able to just think clearly and all that kind of stuff. And I've had a lot of those moments. Many of them were in training in a simulator and something like that. And many of them were real life, you know, landing in Marja, Afghanistan at 4 a.m. with 30 something guys in the back, no moon, knowing that we were going to get shot going in or going out. And I remember those nights being a little bit nervous, but being totally 100% on top of my game, because there had been so much that had happened before that I'd gone through to inoculate me to that stress. And this is a different type of stress. You know, this is this low level, not physical danger, but constant, where, yeah, you know, your mind is, it's not just 10 seconds where I got to survive this and I'm going to do everything I can. This is like constant, weeks and months of, you know, thinking about how this is going
to
turn
out. Well, you know, and what's remarkable too, though, as I note, is that you've got about the same size of a crew to protect, actually, and to work with here, right? You know, it's a very similar, yeah, number to those 24 Marines in the back and your crew and what you have now in terms of your employees trying to do that. And I know, you know, John, with you, it's also similar, you know, employees and workers are something that's extremely important to you. And I wonder, how has that communication gone, and the sense of responsibility you have for them? You know, how are you Obviously, with this government assistance package, it may be you feel really lightened, perhaps, you know, and being able to maybe hold on a bit longer. But how has that gone, communicating with your employees and working with them?
Yeah, there's really two pieces to what the government's doing, which is really important, right? One is the business side, but then the other is the expanded benefits programs for the employees, and that really is where I get a real sigh of relief. Let's imagine they did nothing for the business, and my business had to go away. At least there's something, there's a safety net for the actual individuals right now, which is something that, again, we've never seen before. And it in many cases, it equals their, you know, the 4 months of unemployment, as I understand it, with the way they've structured it, can equal for that period of time the same amount of money they've been making with us when they're working full time. It's across my mind, it sounds a little too good to be true, which worries me, because most things that are too good to be true are not true. And but right now, you know, and we're getting ready to deliver this message to our teams tonight as to what the options are. You know, it's funny, Jarrett and I took a walk the other day, and Jarrett was, you know, had printed out the latest and greatest on Thursday, and then Friday I was on the phone with my attorneys getting their point of view. There have been about 7 other points of views that I've followed, because in the end, we've got to make management decisions to figure out what works for our people. Right. Some people, it turns out, may be actually better off if we lay them off. It depends on their personal needs. There's some that will be furloughed, and then there's some that will stay on, and then there's some that will have reduced hours, but there's a remedy for that as well, in terms of a catch up to applying for unemployment with less hours, or even possibly, and I don't know if this passed or not, but lower pay. There's a catch up piece in the legislation. So there's all kinds of options. It's a little bit confusing because it's 800 or 900 pages. The most stressful thing right now is not where I was a week ago, which is, how am I going to say to people who have worked for us for 10, 15, 18, 19, our longest turns 20 years. And
wow.
And our average manager's been with us 13 years. How do I let them, I move from, my God, we're going to let them down after all this time, to we didn't do enough to be able to take care of them, to what's the right decision, given our new set of information we have? And that's actually kind of feels complex a little bit, which is
yeah.
a new one also.
Yeah. Ali, how about you? I mean, do you have a similar situation and, you know, sort of conversations with your employees and your group?
Early on, I made the decision to lay off 4/5 of our team. It was a really hard decision to come to, but ultimately made it because I just didn't have hours to give. We had first cut our shifts and then cut the store's hours. And I made the decision that for the people, and I, mind you, I have a lot of part-timers, only had 3 full-timers, but for the people who were really part-time, it actually was going to benefit them more to get into the queue for unemployment sooner rather than having to wait. So on one hand, that means that I don't get to take advantage of something like the PPP because I don't have the same number of employees now as I did on, I think it's February 1st. But ultimately, I'm grateful, like John said, that unemployment is hopefully gonna help out with a lot of that. But yeah, really hard decisions. And the staff and everyone who was laid off, it was with the knowledge that we'd like them to come back if it makes sense once all of this is over, whenever that is. Yeah. All of our staff was really gracious and understanding about the position. And it was hard because I when I started the business, I want to make sustainable careers in food service and retail. But I just had to accept that I'm a 4-month-old business. And right now, that's not something that I can truly do, given an emergency like this.
Well, Jarrett, I think just finishing off, I'd love to just get a sense. I mean, we've talked through some of these situations, but your kind of plan for the immediate future, I'd love to get a sense of what those look like. It sounds like things are changing so rapidly, it's hard to know. Like today, it's one thing, and, you know, it seems like there's been an uptick in optimism, at least with this new support package, but, you know, things could also change quite quickly. And I'd love to get a sense today at this moment, kind of what your plans are for the immediate future for Lose. What does it look like?
So first, I think it's balancing entrepreneurial spirit with public health and safety. You know, again, we've kind of moved into these new businesses, and there is a lot of excitement in my business where, you know, again, people are getting on a food truck and serving food and doing dinners and things like that where we've never done it before. And I think people are excited about it, but also balancing that against making sure that we're doing the right thing. I think we're going to continue doing what we're doing. And there is, I'm really fortunate that the crew at Lou's is strong, you know, and there's a lot of tenure and people are loyal and, you know, not to me, but to the brand, to Lou's and to the community. I'm doing everything I can to embrace that and you know, keep that going, but also make sure that we're doing the right thing. And then, you know, I think as I, part of this is looking at the long term too, you know, of what is going to be sustainable for us, because as John said, this is going to change everything, you know, and the image that most people have of Lou's is on a Sunday morning and waiting online and, you know, everyone shoulder to shoulder and people eating right next to you. And I don't know if that's going to be a thing anymore. And, you know, we need to be ready not only to make it through this short period of, you know, very, very dynamic time, but then also the long term and making sure that our business is sustainable and you know, executable in the future.
How about you, Ali? What are some of the things you're looking at over the next bit? I mean, what's the future of Still North Books?
Yeah. So immediate future, we're entirely online. The few staff that I've left, our current plan is for all of us to take 2 weeks to be working separate from each other. With New Hampshire's stay-at-home order, even non-essential businesses are permitted to have more than one employee in the space and permitted to do curbside and delivery, which is different from a lot of other states. So we're going to take a couple of weeks and evaluate whether that's something that we feel comfortable with and look at potentially opening back up, opening used very liberally there, opening back up for curbside and delivery, or if we're going to just kind of try to weather this entirely online. And we're looking at ways to keep connecting with our customers digitally, looking at ways to do virtual book clubs over Zoom or story times so that we can bring back some of that experience of an indie bookstore, even when the thing that defines us, which is community, is just taking on a totally different meaning.
Thank you. And John, how about you? Just to close this off, how are you looking at the future right now?
I mean, there's two pieces for me, right? So one is, you know, I stepped away as CEO of Beloco 2 years ago, actually this summer,
right?
And passed it on to my team. It's been with us for many, many years. I've been actually trying for 20 years to get out of the restaurant business. Really not working. I've got a lot of work to do today, just as the majority owner of Beloco, to sort of make sure it's okay, make the right decisions for the people, make sure that we're understanding the health ramifications. But, you know, most of my time is spent on a technology company that's actually focused on the same mission as Beloco was, but technology to enable, you know, workers in low wage jobs to rise and thrive. And so we look at this as, you know, sadly, a really important opportunity to get the attention of people. I mean, our top member in Worthy, who's just such an incredible human being down in Boston, was laid off from his job last week. And, you know, we immediately hired him. So we're working right now to really take this point of time to make sure that the voice of the hourly worker has a place to be heard, where they build their foundation so that when the job market does come back, their job readiness is an all-time high. Where in the past few years, jobs have been so easy to get that people have just shown up and they get hired on the spot.
Right.
That's about to change, and it'll be more like it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. And so I'm really focused on that as my future, which is, you know, how do we scale helping people in hourly wage, low wage jobs have a better future?
Yeah, that's fantastic, John. I think that's
based in Hanover, by the way. So it's a Hanover. Yeah,
I think, a great place to kind of end this today. And I just want to thank all three of you, John, Ali, Jarrett, for your time today. You know, let's hope that it's not too long before we are all sitting, you know, shoulder to shoulder again at Lou's, you know, and standing in that line and buying books and buying burritos. And let's hope that comes back soon. And, you know, hang in there. Wish you all the best. And I really appreciate your time today. Thanks for being here.